Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, the U.S. is deploying more military personnel to Syria. A new twist in the race for the White House. A look at the U.S. government's role in WhatsApp encryptioning. And the 15th annual Tribeca Film Festival concludes with several stars in the events.
This is concentrated fun. We shot in 3 days. Yeah, everybody jumped in.
It's all coming up right here on The Voice of America. Right now, we have our social media fellow stepping into the office, Andrew Palchevsky.
Are using social media as kind of a platform to express their displeasure about this. So it's not just these protests in the streets, it's protests online. But you have people, too, that maybe they were, supporting the Vietnam War or in support of military action, but didn't really have a vehicle, like a protest, to go out and say, yeah, we support, the Vietnam War. But you see people on social media doing that. They're going out and saying, no, we support this. We're, think that this is a good move. This needs to be done. It's a necessary move. So it's giving those people a voice as well. So it's creating much more of a debate rather than a one-sided kind of, protest atmosphere. It really is a back and forth.
Okay. Well, as we've been talking about the Syria story, we have gotten our technical problems corrected. Thanks to everybody involved. And we're going to go now to President Obama. He did announce today that 250 military personnel are going to be sent to Syria with the ground presence there, about up to 300. And here is the president speaking not too long ago in Germany.
And just as I've approved additional support for Iraqi forces against ISIL, I've decided to increase U.S. support for local forces fighting ISIL in Syria. A small number of American special operations forces are already on the ground in Syria, and their expertise has been critical as local forces have driven ISIL out of key areas. So given the success, I've approved the deployment of up to 250 additional U.S. personnel in Syria, including special forces, to keep up this momentum. They're not going to be leading the fight on the ground, but they will be essential in providing the training and assisting local forces as they continue to drive ISIL back. So make no mistake, these terrorists will learn the same lesson as others before them have, which is your hatred is no match for our nations united in the defense of our way of life. And just as we remain relentless on the military front, we're not going to give up on diplomacy to end the civil war in Syria, because the suffering of the Syrian people has to end, and that requires an effective political transition.
Regional analyst Stephen Zunes of the University of San Francisco tells VOA's Victor Beatty the latest U.S. deployment could be viewed as mission creep in both Syria and Iraq, as Andrew was just talking about.
At the same time, given that Obama has had a pretty cautious approach in terms of U.S. Military involvement in Syria, it could be an indicator that the initial troop deployment has been successful, and that it is an indication, in his mind at least, that additional U.S. forces could actually advance the cause of defeating ISIS and strengthening local forces that are fighting them.
Is there a momentum shift against Islamic State in both Iraq and Syria?
The Islamic State has definitely experienced a number of setbacks. The problem, though, is that if there are indeed population centers where ISIS is driven out, what replaces them? Especially on the Iraqi side, there are concerns that given the misrule and the tensions between the Shia-dominated government and the Sunni-populated cities in that area, that returning to the unpopular governance that made possible the opening for ISIS would mean that ISIS could very well make a comeback. Similarly, in Syria, are the popular forces that the United States supports capable of administrating areas? Obviously, there is some concern about the Syrian government taking over, again, given their history of repression and war crimes. So I think the simple answer is ISIS being defeated militarily. Yes, in certain ways they are, but the big question, which is going to be a lot more challenging, is can they be defeated politically?
There is this notion of a so-called safe zone. Is that something that is feasible at this point?
Logistically, it would be very difficult, and there would be a number of political and legal questions as well. But the problem in many respects is that the Turkish government has been allowing arms and volunteers to cross the border to support Islamist groups. And whenever the West threatens to crack down, the Turkish government threatens to retaliate by either allowing a large number of the refugees to flow into Europe or close the border in such a way that those fleeing the fighting in Syria would be stuck.
In a sign the cessation of hostilities is in trouble, at least 26 people were killed in airstrikes and shelling Sunday in Syria's largest city, Aleppo. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Treating someone infected with viruses such as HIV, Ebola, influenza, and Zika has always been a challenge. Viruses are known to quickly mutate and develop a resistance to drugs designed to eliminate them. Scientists looking to create antiviral medications usually go after these nasty bugs one at a time. But some are expanding their focus to develop drugs that will fight more than one type of virus at once. Unfortunately, some of the new methods used to fight multiple viruses may also be poisonous to healthy cells. A team of Asian and American scientists say they've come up with a plan that fights a wide range of viruses, even those that mutate to develop resistance. This new approach uses a polymer called polyethylenamine that is specially treated to make it non-toxic. This polymer electrostatically interacts with both viral and human cells to prevent infection. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
The effort to prevent billionaire Donald Trump from becoming the Republican Party's nominee for U.S. president has taken a new step. And to tell us all about it, here in the studio is reporter Chris Hannis. Welcome, Chris.
Thank you.
First of all, what has happened?
Well, we've had for a couple of months this kind of underground efforts to prevent Donald Trump from getting a majority of the delegates. And on Sunday night, we had Ted Cruz and John Kasich, their campaigns, within just about 15 minutes of each other, put out statements talking about this effort in their campaigns where Kasich is going to kind of step aside and not campaign in the state of Indiana, and Cruz, in turn, is going to not really campaign in the states of Oregon or New Mexico, basically ceding to each other the total vote that's not for Trump.
So they're coordinating their forces.
Exactly.
And you know, I wonder if I must be legal.
Well, there's, you know, as far as we know, nothing that specifically says, hey, you can't do this. I mean, all they're saying is, listen, I'm, you know, for Kasich saying, listen, I'm not going to compete in Indiana. So anybody who backs me, go ahead and vote for Cruz. That way our combined votes will amount to a majority there and keep Trump from getting those delegates.
And we should say that the Republican Party, some members of the Republican Party have also come forward and with concern about Trump just sliding on in because they're concerned that Clinton or the Democratic nominee might be able to beat a Trump candidate.
Exactly. We've seen a number of national polls saying, okay, if there were a hypothetical race between Trump and Clinton or Trump and Sanders, who would you vote for? He loses to both of them pretty handily, whereas Cruz loses by a little bit less. And Kasich actually, in a number of polls, would beat Clinton if asked that question.
Which is interesting because he hasn't done that well with his own delegates from his own party.
Exactly. He's really only taken his home state.
Well, with the two candidates joining forces against Trump, what is really their game plan?
Well, the biggest thing that we're looking towards is the May 3rd primary in Indiana. That's one where you get a big batch of delegates if you win the statewide vote, plus in each congressional district you get a couple of delegates if you win it. So the plan is Kasich steps aside, Cruz goes in and campaigns hard, and he tries to win the statewide vote there and try to take as many of those delegates as he can. And each delegate he wins is one that Donald Trump cannot win. And if he doesn't get to a majority of the delegates, they get to an open convention in July, and either Cruz or Kasich then could become the nominee.
And have we heard anything from Trump's camp about a response to all this?
Yes. Trump, in the last couple of weeks, has really been hitting the party hard, saying he's being treated very unfairly by the process. He continued that again, accusing them of colluding and saying this is the only way that they can keep their campaigns alive.
And Trump had mentioned recently that he was going to mellow a bit and become more of a presidential candidate. Have we seen that?
Well, he did say that. And then yesterday at a rally, he kind of spoke to that, saying, you know, that's not what I'm going to do. Everything that I've said, all the controversial statements, that's what I'm going to do if I'm elected.
You know, I can't remember publicly two candidates ever lining themselves up against another member of their own party like this.
Sure. It's certainly a product of this election where usually by this point we have a very good idea of who a nominee is going to be. They've amassed enough delegates, enough of the other candidates have dropped out, where it's almost a foregone conclusion. In this case, the other two candidates can't mathematically get to a majority. Trump can get there, but he has to do very well. And because of that, because there's this uncertainty, this is the only shot that they have.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Chris, for stopping by.
Sure.
The recent announcement by mobile messaging service WhatsApp that it would begin offering end-to-end encryption made worldwide headlines. That's no surprise, given the app has approximately 1 billion users across the globe. What was surprising and mostly unnoticed was the role the U.S. government ultimately played in making that happen. International Edition's Doug Bernard covers the cyber world and joins us now here in the studio. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Susan.
Hey, what's all this WhatsApp news about?
You mean what's up with WhatsApp?
Right.
Very recently, WhatsApp announced that it is incorporating its offering end-to-end encryption in its text message service. It's used by over a billion people. And so that means now potentially over a billion people will have really solid end-to-end encryption. Now, they did it by incorporating a little program that's called Signal. What really wasn't reported is that Signal, this little tiny company, actually was supported by something called the Open Technology Fund. This is a fund that's administered by Radio Free Asia, a sister broadcaster to Voice of America, using all government funding, and basically they're there to support the development and spread of tools like encryption, circumvention, and anonymizing software.
So what is the Open Technology Fund and how does it work?
So OTF receives approximately, funds vary, but approximately $8 million a year. These are funds that they use to distribute to promising upcoming new startup companies that are developing these privacy protection encryption type programs. What they're really trying to do is help protect people, vulnerable people in autocratic countries. And of course, there's millions and millions of people living under such circumstances trying to get along on their phone or online. So OTF is basically encouraging the development of these encryption and other protection programs to help these vulnerable people.
Well, in a feature you recently wrote, which was on the VOA website, and mm-hmm. they can go look at it if they want to, you said that it might surprise some that the OTF is supporting encryption.
Right.
Why is that surprising?
So here you have essentially a government agency, the OTF, to the tune of about $8 million a year, actively encouraging development of encryption at the same time that you have another branch of the government, the Department of Justice, who is actively trying to limit and work with Silicon Valley to pull back and limit, basically, the spread of encryption. And a third part of government, this time the legislative or Congress branch, where members are now seriously looking at legislation that would mandate limits on encryption. So it looks like you have various, in fact, you do have various parts of the U.S. government, the same government, that are working, you know, legitimately cross-purposes.
So who's going to win there?
Well, maybe everybody in the short run, because this is, I think, an interesting object lesson in how U.S. democracy works. It is not all top-down. It is not everybody marching to the same tune. In very often, on any number of issues, this time encryption, there are all kinds of competing interests. And those interests are allowed to go on competing with each other for a certain period of time. Now, there may come a point where Literally like at maybe the presidential level or discussions between the president and Congress, that kind of serious initiatives are looked at. But I think for the time being, basically what's happening is both of these two parts of the government are going to continue doing what they do, continue supporting it and backing it up. And just as an interesting side note, here you have a third part of the government, the Voice of America, reporting on the conflict between these other two.
I see that. Okay, well, thank you very much, Doug.
You bet.
This is VOA.
You lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
I'm Neil Arcega, host of VOA's The Correspondents, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day. Wherever the news may be, our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondents, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Singer Billy Paul, best known for his song Me and Mrs. Jones, died Sunday. He was 80 years old.
Me and Mrs. Jones, we got a thing going on. We both know that it's wrong, but it's much too strong to let it go now.
The 15th annual Tribeca Film Festival concluded Sunday with stars like Viola Davis, Danny DeVito, and Jane Fonda being a part of the events in New York. International Edition's Steve Norman has details.
Four-time Oscar nominee Ethan Hawke premiered his new movie, The Phenom, at the festival. The movie is a sports drama about a talented young baseball pitcher who was sent to a sports psychologist, and memories he has abused as a child come to light.
I was knocked out by the script, and the second I read it, I wanted to be in it. And so I'm happy that we're finally getting to show it to people. This will be a movie that, you never know how movies go over when they first come out. But I have a lot of confidence that this will be a movie that, over time, will find its fans.
Danny DeVito directed the short film Curmudgeons, which held its world premiere in the shorts narrative section of the festival. He also stars in the movie alongside his daughter Lucy, who is a producer, along with his son Jake.
This is concentrated fun. We shot it in 3 days. Yeah, everybody jumped in.
Viola Davis's movie Custody held its world premiere at Tribeca. She plays a New York judge in the middle of a child custody case. The movie filmed in New York.
You can't recreate New York. It's another character in and of itself. It's another beast in and of itself, And so it literally became another character to be either defeated or embraced.
And TV is also a big draw at Tribeca. Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin attended events to promote the second season of their Netflix comedy, Grace and Frankie. Tom Hiddleston walked the carpet ahead of a panel and screening of his new TV series, The Night Manager. And Juliana Margulies and other Good Wife co-stars attended a farewell event for their long-running CBS drama. I'm Steve Norman in Washington.
And thanks for joining us for International Edition.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is sending urgently needed humanitarian assistance in response to the crisis in Yemen, the Middle East's poorest and most food insecure country. Since 1990, when North and South Yemen unified and became the Republic of Yemen, the country has experienced long periods of conflict and civil war, including the 2011 uprising, a part of the Arab Spring. The most recent military conflict there began in March of last year, when the Houthis took over large swaths of territory and forced the elected president, Abed Mansour Hadi, to flee the country. At the request of President Hadi, a Saudi Arabian-led military coalition began airstrikes against Houthi positions. Since then, some 2.8 million Yemenis have been displaced. Over 20 million Yemenis are in need of humanitarian protection and assistance, and at least 6 million are in need of life-saving food assistance. According to the UN Emergency Children's Fund, or UNICEF, as a result of the violence and restrictions on imports, the inflow of food and fuel have been disrupted, hampering the delivery of basic services across Yemen. So, for example, health clinics report severe shortages of supplies, medical equipment, and personnel. As a result, UNICEF estimates that in the past year, nearly 10,000 children under 5 years old may have died of preventable diseases, such as pneumonia or diarrhea, increasing to 50,000 the number of children under five who die every year in Yemen. Indeed, it is the country's children who pay the highest price. Nearly 10 million Yemeni children are now in need of urgent humanitarian assistance. Some 2 million are at risk from diarrheal diseases, and 320,000 are facing severe acute malnutrition. In early April, the United States announced it is providing nearly $139 million of new humanitarian aid to support those affected by the conflict in Yemen and across the region as a result of this conflict. This includes 122,000 metric tons of additional food supplies, as well as emergency health care, nutrition services, shelter, and safe drinking water. The United States has mobilized a robust humanitarian response to the crisis in Yemen, despite the complex and insecure operating environment. We urge our friends and partners around the world to follow our lead and help Yemen in its hour of greatest need.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, the host for Jazz America, where each week we give you the best of jazz past and present and conversation with the music makers. You can hear the program online at voanews.com and on the air on VOA each Saturday and Sunday at 13 hours Universal Time. Join me for Jazz America and help me celebrate the greatness of a century of jazz. Listen at 13 hours Universal Time, Saturdays and Sundays, on voanews.com and the Voice of America.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports. For detailed information about your favorite sports, visit our website, voaafrica.com. And if you want to chat with me and sports fans in Africa and all over the world, visit my Sunny Side of Sports Facebook page. There, the sports talk never stops. So come on, join the action with the Sunny Side of Sports.
When news breaks, VOA News is there.
VOA.
Around the clock, listen to VOA newscasts on the top of each hour, along with our detailed news shows and analysis.
VOA News. We're online at voanews.com.
At voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.